I'm joined by Will Dog, bass player and founder of Ozo Motley. Will, can you hear me?
Yep.
All right. Thank you for joining me on Is Good on killradio.org, taking time away from your busy schedule. You guys are working on a new album right now, right?
Yeah, we're currently in the studio working on our, what is it? Is it fourth LP? Our fourth LP.
Yeah. What's the other release you had? Actually, probably my favorite was the Coming Up EP. There's some incredible tracks on that. You also just had a remix CD of a bunch of Herb Alpert stuff come out. I just picked it up the other day. Two of the tracks are remixed by Ozo Motley. How'd you get involved in that?
I'm not exactly sure how. All I know is one day somebody asked us. I don't remember if it was from Herb Alpert or it could have been from the producer, Anthony Martinelli, who produced the whole record and put the whole thing together, and he just called us and said, you know, I want you to be a part of this. He was actually doing the remix and then wanted us to play on the remix, so we didn't actually do the full remix ourselves. We did it, kind of co-produced it with him. And it really, I mean, yeah, it's been getting a lot of press, and you know, I didn't even know that it was such a big deal when we went into it, you know, and it's turned out that we ended up doing Jay Leno for the first time with Herb Alpert a couple of weeks ago. And like all of a sudden it's like I'm doing tons of press about it and we got on TV, but at the time it was just something cool because actually Herb Alpert, he owned the first record label that we were ever signed to.
Really?
It was Almo Sounds. He actually sold A&M Records, and then him and Jerry Moss started a new label called Almo, Albert Moss, and we were actually signed. So our first record came out, you know, on his label. So it was kind of like a full circle kind of event. And then they were obviously retired, and you know, their assets, which were us and Garbage, got sold to Interscope, unfortunately. So it was just kind of cool to, like, be on the other side with him.
Yeah.
Rather than dealing on some contractual level. It's more like on an artistic level.
Well, collaboration isn't really new to you guys, though. I mean, the entire Ozo Motley collective is a big collaboration of different kinds of sounds and different musical backgrounds. Before your last album, Street Signs, you even added what you had originally started with, you know, Latin music and funk and hip-hop, and then you added some North African and Middle Eastern flavors to the album, which surprised some people, I think. And I was just wondering, you guys have always been sort of a political group, and how did that affect your music?
You know what, I think it's, the thing about us as a band, as a whole, is our music and our politics and just who we are as people aren't separate, you know? I think, it was kind of like this natural progression of, you know, there was so much focus on the Middle East. At the same time, we were actually getting into that music, and it just kind of seems to happen that way with us, where it's just kind of all, it all just seems to happen at the right time, where
right.
It's like, at the same time we're getting into North African music is, you know, when 9/11 happened and all this blame was being put on, you know, and all these attacks are being put on Middle East, people from the Middle East, and...
Right, and everybody's promoting this us versus them mentality.
Yeah, and like Go America, where, you know, where you would think that maybe Ozo Motley is going to start singing country western tunes about let's go kill them all. But no, instead...
That started to happen with some other group.
What's that?
That started to happen with some other group.
Well, yeah, you know, and you know what? And for them, maybe that's a natural progression for them, but not for us. You know, it's like, for us is like combat that, and what's the way that we do that you know, as being an Ozomai, you know, that's through our music, is like speaking through our music to people and kind of trying to represent people just through our, in an artistic way, you know, and that's kind of just like the way we think about our art, you know, and it's like whenever we're writing, even now, or it's always like, what are we trying to say to people, you know, and we do the best job we can is to try and, you know, speak through the people in like kind of like their voice in a way where it's not like we're getting so caught up in what we're going through every day so much. We don't kind of make that kind of music where it's
right.
Where it's, I mean, it is spiritual to us as an individual, but I think it also needs to speak broader. It's not like, oh, just so clean, you know, cut down the middle where it's like just speaking from my mind and that's it, you know? And,
right.
You know, we don't put down that music either, but just I think as a band, that's what we always like, well, who are we trying to represent and how are we best trying to do that? And I think that's what we always think, and that's what kind of came out on Street Signs. It was like, you know, that Middle Eastern flavor and, you know, just kind of like naturally came together and it just, I don't think it was a coincidence either, you know?
Right. Well, in many ways, your audience kind of speaks through your music. Like before Street Signs, you had Embrace the Chaos, which was not only released on 9/11, but also for, when you started the inspiration for that album, as far as I understand, came from the performance that you did at the protest for the DNC in 2000.
Yeah.
And which is interesting because that's also how Kill Radio started. We started as the audio wing of the L.A. Indie Media Center. And,
oh, back in MacArthur Park.
Yeah, and so they came up with this internet streaming audio so they could report on the protests at the DNC, and then after that happened, they sort of had this radio station, you know, that they didn't know what to do with, and so it became killradio.org.
Great.
But, yeah, you guys, I was reading about your performance there, and what it said in the article was you performed one song and then the rubber bullets started flying.
Well, yeah, and you know what's interesting is, yeah, we performed one song and immediately they, you know, the chief of police got on the air and declared it an unlawful protest. Now, it boggles my mind just to think that a place that's designated for a protest, you know, they basically gave us an area to protest in, and then that area is declared unlawful,
right.
You know. And also what the trip is about Kill Radio is when after we were being attacked by the LAPD, and there's like, where do we go? Where do we run? We ended up going to that same center, and that's where we ended up, and that's where we all met each other at the night. We walked from downtown there. Everyone's like, go there. And, you know, it's kind of cool where it's like Kill Radio came out of that. The inspiration for Embrace the Chaos came out of that, as well as that's where we all ended up going. Like, that was the only place that we had to go that night, you know?
Yeah, and this topic of, you know, a public place being illegal and people in general being illegal is, like, really big in the news right now with the Sensenbrenner bill and everything and all the walkouts from the high schools.
Say that again?
Of the walkouts from the high schools that's going on with the Sensenbrenner bill and people being determined illegal, this idea that people can be illegal.
This
in the news a lot, and, you know, it's causing a lot of unrest, a lot of friction, especially here in L.A., where there's such a large immigrant population.
Yeah, I mean, we want to talk about illegals, you know, and, I mean, let's just look at how this country has been developed and formed. It's been based on this so-called, you know, immigrant thing, you know, it's like,
yeah.
And to just label people as, you know, illegal immigrants and kind of dehumanizing and not putting faces on them rather than even just, you know, the label of an undocumented person, you know, to not even, it's like illegal immigrants, it's not even giving them a humanistic value to a place that's totally about, okay, this is where you can come and make it. You know, this is what this country puts out all over the world, you know, is like America is this place where people could come and make it. And you know what? People believe it all over the world and they try to get here. And then they get here and they're just being completely attacked, you know, by the system that's like calling them to come, you know, and puts out this whole campaign, you know, about where this is the free country. And, but you know, what's really going on, what's really interesting is like the students and how they're coming out. I mean, my mom's a teacher and 500 kids walked out and totally organized it themselves, you know? And I just think that's great because that's getting almost as much publicity as like 500,000 people downtown. You know what I mean? These kids walking out. It's like, that's like the biggest thing is when these high school kids that are pretty much in these institutions that, you know, half of them are built by people that design prisons, you know? You know, like Fairfax, where I went, you know, was designed by the same guy that designed San Quentin, you know, and these kids like coming together and walking out because, you know, a lot of their parents are also maybe documented or undocumented, but they're, you know, first, second generation from other countries.
Well, we're definitely breeding a culture of don't ask questions, submit, and it's being completely overlooked that this entire, all the rights that we have, that we're so proud of having as Americans, come from protest. You know, the eight-hour day and worker rights, they come from labor strikes. And when we hear on the news about, oh, these war protesters and they're all a bunch of, you know, unpatriotic hippies, that's about as unpatriotic as you can get, is, you know, calling protest illegal. Because that's what this whole country is based on. And that's also how I wanted to get on how Ozamotli really formed in the beginning, in 1995. Will Dog specifically were involved in a sit-in related to the Peace and Justice Center. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, at that time, I was in my, you know, I don't want to give my age, but I was about 20 years old. And, you know, but at that time, you know, it was really hard to get a job. This was post, you know, riot. You know, this was...
Right, you know, one year later.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of money being poured into inner city to try and put Band-Aids on situations in terms of, like, giving inner city youth jobs. And that's when I came up, and I was looking for a job. So the job that you could get if you were my age, being a high school dropout, not going to college, and was the job you could get was for the Los Angeles Conservation Corps. There was a bunch of money being poured into these inner city kind of like give youth jobs, which was almost like for politicians to say, you know, kind of like, I gave, you know, 10,000 inner city kids jobs last year, whatever, you know, it's kind of like about this quota system that I kind of found out later. But, in the midst of it, we basically were trying to get, we had all this back pay that we weren't paid for, and they weren't giving us the raises, this organization. So we came together, and we wanted to put together a union, and we realized that if we had 70% of the workers, it was a legitimate union, no matter what job it was. And so we, in doing so, Conservation Corps got wind of it, what we were trying to do, and they basically took us and tried to disperse us all over the city to different, you know, and break us up. And what we did then is we held a sit-in in our building. They threatened police action, but they, you know, the Conservation Corps is supposed to help kids, so they don't want to arrest these youth because that's going to get them bad press. So we ended up having a mediation with the Conservation Corps and getting rights to the building. But we ended up losing our jobs, so we started a cultural community center dedicated to arts and inner-city youth and called it the Peace and Justice Center. And to raise money for the Peace and Justice Center, we would have, you know, benefits like art shows and concerts and even, like, skateboarding and breakdance events. And that's how Ozamotli got together. It was kind of like, you know, we knew a bunch of musicians, and we just called them, like, come down and jam, and, you know, it doesn't pay, but it's really good cause.
How did you, this was back in 95, like, did you have an idea what kind of music you were going to play? Did you know it was going to be this mix? Wikipedia.org calls you Latin funk / world beat / rock en español, so nobody really knows what Ozamotli is.
Yeah, that's been our up and downfall. No, you know what, man? It was, I mean, I had a little idea just because of the makeup of who was coming down and to jam, and it was kind of like what I always wanted to do, but I don't think it was like anything intentional. I think basically when you have like a group of guys together who are really diverse and come from totally different backgrounds musically and have done different things musically, because I think all of us have had an extensive background in terms of studying music coming into the band, but we were like all scattered out. I think when you look at the makeup of who is in the band and what they bring, and that's kind of where the sound came from, was where like Raul, you know, brought like Nueva Canción and like traditional, Mexican music, yeah. You know, and Justin more brought like Afro-Cuban, you know, and kind of like a early 90s hip-hop sound, and you know, even Cut Chemist at the same time brought like an old breakbeat, you know, kind of vibe with his DJing, and Azdrew with salsa, and Uli with his, you know, knowing kind of like punk rock and classical music. I mean, that guy is really, you know, and then me being more into reggae and funk and early 80s hip hop. You know, you kind of put all that together, and then of course with Charlie Tuna, I think that's kind of.
You've reached out to some great rappers on several albums, Charlie Tuna, Common, De La Soul.
Yeah, I mean, the whole thing with Common, I think that came about more so because of our producer, Bob Powell at the time, has a really tight relationship with Common, and we talked about that song that we were, that, you know, Embrace the Chaos, and what we wanted to say on that song, and actually, the rappers put down, I'm not going to say all of who they are, but it was really hard to get somebody that would speak what we want, you know, what we wanted to say on that song, how important that song was. And when Common came back and showed us the lyrics of what he was doing, I think that's it all kind of came together. As well as, like, with De La Soul, I mean, we've been fans of them just growing up. I mean, yeah. Even look at Kinetic Source, who was our MC at the time, was on there, and same with like Medusa, you know? I mean, not too many people are hip to Medusa, but she's, you know, one of the most unknown influential MCs in LA.
Yeah, I saw her play live once at Fado Do downtown, and like, I was like, wow, I'm definitely going to see this person again somewhere. And then, like, shortly thereafter, I heard her on your album. And it's funny how, like, if you're into good music, you just can't escape it. No matter what you go to Amoeba and buy, it's going to be somehow connected to something you already have.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like Medusa, I mean, I grew up, the first time I was even ever into hip-hop, you know, in 1985, Medusa was out there doing her thing. I mean, that woman is like, you know, so it was kind of like one of those things where we wanted a woman MC, and it was like, who else to get, you know?
Yeah.
On our record. So yeah, I mean, it's like no brainer working with her, you know?
So, let me ask you one more question. I don't want to keep you. I know you guys are really busy. So we're talking about how you have these hip hop influences and Latin influences and Middle Eastern influences. So why is it that, a little Jewish white New Yorker like myself is so into your music? What is it about this this combination, this unusual mix of music that you think really touches so many people? I mean, you've had live acts where you were able to sustain, I read this the other day, last year, a 45-minute encore in Australia.
I don't remember that, but
no, that's
I'm
what
sure
it
happened.
Yeah.
I can't say that it didn't happen.
Well, my point is, you guys really, when you play live and when people hear your music, like everybody, it doesn't matter where you're from, people have this kinetic reaction to it. So do you think it's just being honest and being good musicians, or do you think there's something about Oz O'Motley that really connects with their audience?
You know what, man? All I could think is if I was in the audience watching, and I think, you know, trying to take myself out of it, which is really hard from being the person that's actually on stage looking at the audience, kind of like being able to not look at myself and look, maybe watch our DVD or something to kind of see why. But I think even for myself, like, I really believe that I would truly be into Ozo Motley if I wasn't into it, if I wasn't in the band, you know? And I think there's a number of reasons. I think people relate to us. We're not, first of all, I think we give 500% every time we play. We care about what people think about us. It's not like we're these kind of artists where, like, you know, we want people to enjoy themselves and like us. And when they don't, we feel like we failed them.
Right.
You know, and I think that it's kind of like we're kind of like servants to our audience. And I think that comes across. And it's also like we're also people that I think the people that come to our concerts are like we're kind of like these kids that you knew growing up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That you that were kind of like these like the musicians at your school or whatever that you kind of dug that were like cool kids but weren't like the coolest kids, you know? We weren't like so cool that you couldn't hang out with us.
Right.
But you know what I mean? But we kind of like are those kids that kind of got along with everybody as well, and I think that comes through is like we're those kids that like at school we could mend the nerds, we were like in between the nerds and the jocks or whatever, you know what I mean?
Right.
We were like those kind of kids. I mean, that's the only thing I could like think about it is like we were those kids that, you know, that knew the nerds who were into Dungeons and Dragons or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then we also knew the kids that were like the star football players. And we could kind of mend that relationship where if you had a party, we could show up with the biggest nerds in the school and no one would go like, what are you doing here with them?
With those nerds, yeah.
No one would say that because we're it's not that we're above that. We just kind of like welcome it all, you know, and I think that people actually feel that, you know, when they come see us and because that's just, I think, who we are as people. Like it has, I think it's beyond like even music. I think people dig our music and like to dance to us, but when they come see us, I think people get it even more than just listening to it on a record. You know what I mean? And
yeah,
like that's, I think that's where it like comes through where it's like people kind of feel a part of us. Like they can come up and actually touch us and like, you know, and we'll actually give them the time of day even as a human being, you know, and it's kind of like, that's kind of like what we try to put out when we're playing. You know, it's not, you're not, we're not there to have, like, look at us, watch me. We're kind of more there, like, to be a part of something. We're, like, watching you, you know?
Yeah, man.
And that's what we, like, there's nothing more that we like than to play one note and people to make, to have that, people to react to that. And that, when people react to that one note, it makes us play better. And, like, we're like, oh, okay, that note's cool then, you know?
Yeah, and they'll really listen, too, and they'll listen to the lyrics, and your lyrics have so much meaning, too, so it gives you an opportunity to really make people think, and not, you know, dancing and enjoying is one thing, but if you can trick people into thinking about something that they might not otherwise be thinking, then you really accomplish something.
Well, yeah, that's also, yeah, I mean, that's also, and that's the thing, is like, if we, because we try new songs all the time and new vibe. If people don't react to it, we kind of don't, like, we don't like to go there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, okay, well, we just want to do this because we feel like it's artistic to ourselves and
right.
Who cares what our fans think? Like, no, we really care, you know? And, you know, and there's no other way to put it, man. Like, we want our fans to like it, and if they don't, we feel like we failed them, you know?
Will Dog, I can't think of a better note to end on, a more positive way of explaining what Ozo Motley is. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to, like, talk to us, Kill Radio, let people listen in. There's a lot of people on the stream right now listening live, and I'm sure they really appreciate it, too.
Right on. Yeah, we do, too. I mean, we appreciate that you're even still doing it, you know?
Rock on, man. So everyone should check out ozomotley.com for more information, like when you're going to go on your when you're going to play next and when the new album can be expected and all that, right?
Yep. We're working on it right now. It should be coming out this September.
Fantastic. Well, I'll be the first in line to get it, I'm sure.
Okay, cool. Bootleg.
Thank you so much, Will Dog. Take care.
All right. Later, man.
Bye.
That was Will Dog of Ozo Motley taking time to talk to Kill Radio, to talk to you, and let you know what Ozo Motley is all about. We only have a few minutes left in the program, so I'm just going to play some more Ozo music. Check out www.ozomotley.com. Check out myspace.com/ozomotley. And yeah, man, what a fantastic guy, what a fantastic group. And LA is really fortunate to have him here. And you're listening to Is Good on killradio.org. Thank you.